And all he was a tiny wee face. Oh, look, forgot to show you that.
Oh no!
Oh, what?
What have you done?
David, let's guess. Right, let's
wait,
see
wait,
it
wait,
again.
Wait. I want a reaction first, ready?
Right.
Folks.
Oh!
That's much better.
Paul's burned his hand masturbating.
It's not a burn, Dave, but you're close. So what I did was I was cutting potatoes and watching football at the same time. Not the best idea.
Ladies and gentlemen, not wanting to get too technical here, but a general chefing tip is try not to look elsewhere when you're cutting things with a sharp knife.
But not only that, Dave, cutting towards myself, like, you know, page one of the book.
Why
really.
The... Gee, the yeah.
I know.
in the list of things not to do, I mean, the only other thing you had there was try not to set your head on fire while you're cooking as well.
So Paul, really, did you have to go to hospital?
No, I had to do this myself, so it's not easy to bandage your own hand.
I'm so glad that you said you did it yourself, because had that been a medical professional, I had concerns.
Dr. Frankenstein. So, no, I did it myself. This is the third dressing, but it stopped bleeding now.
Have you heard of plastic skin?
Is that new skin?
It could be, I don't know, but go to the chemist and you get little bottles and it stings, but you put that onto your cut and it's a layer of plastic that goes over it rather than having a
plaster.
My mother was the only person in our street who had new skin in the cupboard, and we would go to great lengths. I would never show my mum if I cut anything. I would scrub the grit out of it. I would go to somebody else's house. If anyone cried in our street, my mum would run out with new skin. Mm-hmm. And it's the most painful thing in the world.
It is so.
I'm getting it.
If you're cutting stuff or whatever, and then you've got a bloody bandage in your finger, it's very hard to operate. This stuff is a wee coating. It stings at first, and then you've got a coating that's waterproof.
You'll put it on, you'll count to three, and then you'll scream like a zombie.
Oh,
that's exactly the noise you'll make. You go, oh, that's not too. So how have you been, my boys? I've missed you in this Zoom.
Jenny, all good, really. We're kind of back to where we were in April or whenever it was.
We're not. I mean, the English are that now, as of Thursday.
Yeah.
Apart from those who'll leave England to come up here to holiday homes and mobile homes to escape the lockdown.
Exactly. I don't know, man. It's a bit weird. So there's different tiers now. It's getting confusing to the point where personally, I don't care anymore. I'm just like, just leave me alone.
You never go out anyway.
Well, exactly. I'm just going to cut potatoes for Christmas.
That's what to do. And then we'll come and visit you in A&E in January.
But as it's been reported in the press, I've been teaching in a school. So for me, obviously, at home, I can't do anything. I can't go anywhere or any of that. I literally go to my mum's, I'm in my house, or I go to school. But from today, Monday, everybody in school has to wear a mask, all the senior pupils and all the teachers at all times.
Yeah.
So that is a big change.
But it's a good one. I know what you're saying about the tiers, Paul, but I tell you the difference, and it's not a competition, okay, but Boris Johnson is a useless fud. But the difference is level four here is, you know, tantamount to lockdown, but the schools are on. Level three is cafes close at six. Each level's got its own rules. In England, what they had, when they had level three in Liverpool, you could have gyms open. In Manchester, you couldn't. You could have hair sat. You know, it was level three. Didn't mean anything.
Do you remember that scene in The Meaning of Life when John Cleese is talking to other pupils? If it's a Thursday, you hang your coat on the top peg, but you put your shoes in the bottom.
Yeah.
And on it went. It reminded me of that.
In keeping with today's topic, which we shall no doubt jump into in a minute, I think the danger is, although Ms. Sturgeon has done a good job, I think the danger is that they are going to burn down the house to save things. In particular, thinking about South Lanarkshire, where because numbers were high in Hamilton and Motherwell, North South Lanarkshire are level three. But to think that a wee village like Douglas with 1,500 inhabitants has got the same COVID rates as a large town. So they have to look at, I think, over large geographical areas, having more local things and not changing rules, just saying if Hamilton's level three, maybe Douglas is level two. You know, people know the level they're at, but you can split the region up a bit. Imagine if Inverness got an outbreak and people in Plockton have to have the same lockdown as Inverness.
Yeah, bouncers with masks on, that's what we're going to end up with. No, they're right, mate.
No.
Sorry, what?
No.
So I can't understand you. You've got a mask on. Listen, should we actually do this?
Aye.
Who's doing this?
Well, David, Diamond David Goodall, I think this is your topic, so you should do the intro.
Well, okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of 3 Down, 1 Across. I will say this, it is the alpha and omega of episodes. Burning down the house. We are.
Before we start the actual topic of the episode, I think it's only fair that we address the passing of the late, great Sean Connery. Tony Curran, our friend Tony, right? Now, imagine this. He got his first, I think it was his first Hollywood movie, and it was The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, right?
Yes.
And it's your first Hollywood movie, and who are you playing in this movie? The Invisible Man. So he spent 2 months on this movie and you don't see him.
And what movie to be on as well, because, I mean, that's where Sir Sean had certain opinions on the director.
Is that right? I never knew that,
oh,
Dave.
Lord.
Right,
I mean, was publicly saying that the man's an idiot. He's talentless.
Was that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Fantastic.
It was fraught with emotion.
But the story I wanted to share with you about Tony was they both went playing golf and they teed off and both of the shots went right. And Tony got out of the cart and he's looking for his ball and he's about to play his shot. And Sean, and I won't do the voice, Sean Connery says, "What are you doing?" And he says, I'm just going to play my shot. He said, "That's my ball." And he went, no, I'm playing a Titleist too. He said, "So am I." And he went, no, but that's definitely my ball. And Sean Connery went out the cart, picked up the ball and turned it round, 007 on the back of the ball.
Oh, nice. Gavin Mitchell, our lovely Bobby the Barman from Still Game, those who don't know, he had worked with him at the Citizens Theatre, and Gavin is well known from doing impersonations of people. Sean Connery wrote a note to Gavin saying, "Dearest Gavin,
if you ever impersonate me again, I will take legal action," or something like that.
That's right.
Oh, so Gavin thought it was a joke, but then afterwards folks said, "Oh no, that wouldn't have been a joke." He actually hated when people did impersonations of him. So he must have lived his life in hate for a lot of the time.
Yes. You think the reason why I don't get out is because of Shut It, Tadger?
Do you know the best thing that somebody shouted at me at the street was really random, because I get sweet sherry eyes and people have to know and I get all that all the time. But somebody put down their window when I was walking the dog and shouted, "They're plastic plant sizer." Because I know out in my landing, I water my plants, but they're plastic plants. But the gag, of course, is I'm not really watering plants. I'm eating again into somebody's conversation.
It must be dreadful.
It's not dreadful, David. Do you know what? I can imagine if you're Sean Connery or you're Richard Wilson, it would be non-stop. But actually, I have to say, I love it when folks say things. I do. People are always very warm.
When somebody comes up and talks to you, you just go, "Right, what's your story then?" So it's all on them. And Janie loves that. "Right, what happened? What's going on then? Who's your ma?" And all that kind of thing.
People always say to me, "You know this, Paul, guess who they call me?" They always.
I know.
And I go, "No. Is it Isa?" And they go,
"Isa."
The joy of you, Jane, is, and you'll know this, Paul, you'll be speaking to Jane, you'll be on the phone to her, and she'll say, "Oh, I had a phone call from the gas board." Now, to most people, my bill's overdue or I've got an appointment. Well, her, she goes, "Well, it turns out that the guy phoning, his wife has just had a baby." And then they had and you've somehow got this guy's life story when the guy was just phoned up to make an appointment.
And it's in the same caravan park that my mom used to go, blah, blah, blah. So, David.
Paul.
Tell us what this week's episode is all about, please.
As this episode is going out on Guy Fawkes Night, it covers a couple of things. One, the escapades of Guido Fawkes and his crazy friends and their japes wanting to blow up the House of Lords to get a Catholic restored to the throne. And two, given the situation in America and here and in Ukraine and various other places, you have to wonder if sometimes burning down the house is the way to get things done. Maybe not in hindsight, but certainly in a big panic before you've thought through the consequences. It's taking that drastic action to get the end you want, you know, because had he succeeded, I don't think he'd thought much further than, "I'm going to blow this place up." There's a lot of repercussions after that he maybe hadn't gone through in his list of to-do items.
I was looking last night. Did they know like the whole basement was rammed with dynamite? Was it not?
Absolutely, yeah. And as usual, was caught by acts of supreme stupidity.
That's been the story of my life. Not that I've ever done anybody any deliberate harm, but certainly dogging school or
thank God you had school in there. I'm glad.
Oh,
dogging! What a nightmare that was.
Dogging. trunk load of dynamite. I'm always dogging.
But certainly stupidity and not thinking things through has been a kind of common pattern in my life. What about you, Paul Riley?
All I have to do is raise my hand, basically, and show you my bandaged hand.
This gentleman, you may have noticed a missing voice. Mr. Mark Cox is currently otherwise engaged in healthy and fruitful employment. So you're stuck with the three of us today.
On the question of fireworks, and this is to you both, who's the biggest rocket you've ever worked with?
Oh!
Look at Jane's face!
We can't really say that, can we?
No, we can't.
I wrote it down last night, but it was just for a laugh. Okay, but here's the second question, the supplementary, if you will. And this can wait till later, because you can have a wee think about it. Who is the brightest sparkler you've ever worked with?
Oh, see what you've done there.
Oh, that's a lovely question.
You've done that with your fireworks. You've been working hard on that. That's good. I won't name the biggest rocket, but I've got, I can happily tell you. And if the biggest rocket ever hears this and recognises himself, good.
Tell us a story, David.
I knew last night I was stirring this up. I was like, yes.
As you know, I set fights for things. And I was working on a fairly large series. There was a lot of fights in it. It was all kind of kung fu stuff. So there was a lot of rehearsals. We had a little boot camp for the actors, all good stuff. I'm rehearsing the actors. He's coming to the rehearsals going, yeah. And we could really make it, like pow, pow, pow. And he's making noises and swinging his arms wildly. The first day, the first shot, he says to me, oh, I should really have done a shot list, I suppose, but I was watching the telly last night. It got so bad that one of the crew walked past him and said, just tell us the bloody shot, know your favourite films.
Hey!
But it really came to a head in one sequence where we had two lead characters fighting this secretive ninja, and the ninja does a cartwheel between them and then flicks backwards and kicks them both in the face. I have to say it myself, it was a super move. He says to me, see how she flips between them and then does a backflip? Uh-huh. Could she not just do that from standing? I said, well, she'd have to kind of do a big and bend down and leap back. He went, no. He said, you can just do it from standing. I said, well, I don't think you can. And he said, and he wasn't joking, he said, Keanu Reeves does it in The Matrix. And I said, he's on wires. He went, I don't think so.
Hold on one second. I'm just going to open this door. Hold on, wait a minute. The cat's scratching the door.
Mac, the Jack Russell. He's...
She's got to get her headphones on. As ever, folks, it's a podcast. Jane McCarry is shuffling about, doing weird things.
It's rocking. So, David,
hello.
Tell us about your old pal Guy Fawkes. Then
there's nothing much to tell. I think everybody knows.
Well, do they though? That's the interesting thing. Do they actually know? They just know that it's a night where you stand by a fire, unless you're in Northern Ireland, you do it twice a year.
Ah, that's true. It's a good way of getting rid of your old tyres in Northern Ireland as well. It's good.
But for the dogs, can I say that? I mean, this in here, he doesn't bother about anything. But the wee dog back to back from me, she's already in tranquilizers.
What now? We were talking about Guy Fawkes, you don't need tranquilizers.
Aye, the dog, because of the fireworks.
Oh, for the terfs.
Absolutely. Like, our back end goes, she's not going out the house now for a week. That's a shame.
Just for the listeners, Mabel the cat, apart from showing their arse to us on the camera, is now rubbing up against the Mike James microphone.
I'm so sorry. And the dog's lying right here. And as soon as she's bored with me, she'll attack the dog. And it's going to be, I'm so sorry. Right, Mabel, you'll need to get down. She's doing that head thing, David, that Mr. Sox does. My breasts are being kneaded by a cat's head. On your way, Mabel.
It's like listening to Cesar Millan. On your way now, Mabel. So, Guy Fawkes, yes. King James, although he was baptised Roman Catholic, he grew up Protestant and took the throne of England, became head of the Church of England. To sort things out, the gunpowder plot or Jesuit plot was devised, and Guy Fawkes was part of a group of people who got involved with this wonderful plan, which was to blow up the House of Lords during the opening of Parliament and kill the King and his immediate family. And then his 9-year-old daughter Elizabeth, who was up north, would be put on the throne and controlled by the Catholic Church. What could possibly go wrong? But I think what interests me in Guy Fawkes Night is it has to be surely a particularly British thing. One, he's trying to kill a whole batch of people. Two, he's a complete failure. So we celebrate it.
I know, it's bizarre.
Well done that you're a complete knob-end failure. Boom! Yeah. Off go the sparklers.
And is it true that Ian told me this, my oldest boy, that... I think it's Australia and New Zealand fireworks are banned.
Well, hang on a minute. Sydney Harbour Bridge at New Year.
No. That's different because it's like a big organised event.
You can't go to the shop and buy fireworks and shove them in your garden. Fact check! The sale of fireworks to the public is illegal in every Australian jurisdiction except the Northern Territory and Tasmania. Most states banned the practice in the 1980s. However, in New Zealand, you can buy fireworks. They're only sold for the 4 days up to Guy Fawkes, November 2nd to 5th, and you must be 18 years old and have a valid ID to buy fireworks, just like alcohol.
My nephew was in Sydney for a New Year and could not work out how he was going to get to the fireworks because you're miles away from anything. You need to have tickets and blah, blah, blah. He went into the newsagent and he bought a pad and a pen and he went straight to the Opera House the day before and claimed he was from the Daily Record and he was doing a piece on the Sydney fireworks. And he managed to meet this, you know, it's the same gene pool as me, just bullshitted his way to getting a meeting with this woman, did an interview, a fake interview, and says, well, where will I pick up my press pass for tomorrow night? She said, oh, no, I'll get you one, no bother. And he watched the whole thing from Sydney Opera House.
Wow.
Full respect to your nephew, that is fantastic. And it goes to prove, it's that theory that if you walk around somewhere with a pad or a clipboard and a pen, you can go through anywhere, just about. Schools, hospitals, anything. You get a clipboard and a pen, folk just assume you're doing something. Yeah. There was a friend of mine who was a writer, and he was saying when he was a kid, his dad bought him a Dansette. Do you remember the Dansettes?
No.
It rings a bell.
It's a little record player. It's just a wee box, and it's got a lid that folds down. But anyway, his dad bought him his Dansette, plugged it in, didn't work. So I says, well, I'm taking that back. And it was a market stall, and Colin was saying, Dad, you can't.
They won't even be there.
Exactly. He went back, and the guy's there, and he went, all right, oh, that's terrible. Well, hang on a minute, come with us. And he took him to a shop window and said, which one would you like? And again,
excellent.
Their thing was, what they would do on a Saturday morning was go in overalls and just say, right, we've come for that. And because it was Saturday, they were busy, people just assumed it was all kosher.
It is mad, that.
I must say, my whole life, I've always got a thrill out of not paying for things. Like,
be very careful about this, Jane. Be very careful about what you're going to say.
I know. It was a wee bit naughty, but like, say there was a pound stuck in the bus. So you'd have your money and I would keep it in my palm. And what I would do is I'd kind of rustle the pound note that was sticking up, because there was always money stuck in there too because of the pound note. And then he would give me a ticket and I would get in the bus and I would still have my money in my palm, knowing this was the start of me eating too much, of course, but knowing I could buy a sweetie with that at lunchtime. I can't tell you the pleasure that would give me going to school. Like, it would make the difference between a good day and a bad day. And it wasn't even about the sweetie. It was about getting away with not paying. What is that? What is that, Paul? Some part of us all, we want to feel we've got some. And yet I know friends that would hate that. They always play by the rules. I've always tried to sneak in somewhere without having to pay. Some people hate that. I love that. It gives me a thrill beyond anything.
Well, yeah, I have to say, I went to a well-known DIY store that won't be named, B&Q. And this was in Northern Ireland, and we were getting things for a show. So we got all these staffs like dowel, and we went up to the saw place and the guy cut them into lengths for us. We had about 10 of them and they were all barcoded, and the woman took the barcode and went, all right, I think that's £4. And I started gathering them up to head out, and my friend Anna, who was with us, went, no, that's each. Outside, I was going, what's wrong with you? We nearly did it. What's wrong with you? But she was saying, I just couldn't do that.
I know. Well, I couldn't do it if it was a small shop. If I thought it was going to come out of somebody's pocket, you know, like in a restaurant or something, if they got it wrong, I think, oh, maybe that waiter, that they would take it out of their wages. And
No, you wouldn't.
No, no. I know I do have quite a social conscience about that, but see, if it was B&Q or Asda, then I would let it go. Folks, I would never steal, just... because stealing's a different thing to getting away with something or sneaking in.
I'd also like to say, folks, on the question of moral philosophy and ethics, when Jane says it's not like it's stealing,
it is stealing.
Stealing. Let's just get that out of the table.
I know.
Do you remember those night safes? This has just jumped into my head. Do you remember night safes? I don't think they're there anymore.
I think they are somewhere. You can still deposit cash, yeah?
Is that right? Yeah. Aye. Well, there's a fella, I remember seeing a show one time. This guy just put on a costume, made up a sign, said, night safe broken, please leave it with the security guard. And folk just came up and went, oh, right, okay, put it in the bag, and that was it. And then off the guy went, that was it.
Well, the thing that drives me nuts, they're saying £2 billion in fraud now for people who have claimed through fake businesses.
Yes.
Now that drives me. For what, 3 or 4 million self-employed people who don't qualify for a penny and have just been left to sink or swim, who have paid taxes their entire life, get anything. But is it 2 billion? I'm sure that was the figure in fraud.
Somewhere in a lockup, Jane, there's been a production meeting about how we're going to screw the system now that this new thing's happened, right? How do we do it? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about that was within a week of the business loans coming in, folk had set up fake companies. And at one point, one chap found out that he had taken out a loan. They set up an account and then they got a loan into that account. So this guy had suddenly owed 10 grand. But like you say, Paul, about production meetings, but that's within a week of this scheme happening, folk were on it. If you think, if they'd used that level of intelligence, which it is massive intelligence, that level of intelligence for good, it'd be quite interesting as to what they could achieve.
Mm. Yeah.
Certainly more than the current foppish scarecrow arsehole in Downing Street.
I thought you were going Donald Trump, but there you go.
No.
Either way.
We'll build up to that.
You do want somebody to say, I was listening to Tony Blair speaking on the radio this morning. Now, whatever it was, Tony Blair, the right or the wrong, and I'm not even interested anymore in what political party. It's just who is actually going to get us out of this and who's talking sense. And he really did. He had a very strong vision, didn't he, David, of what we should be doing now. But I've not heard that at all from the Conservatives.
Hang on a minute. Hang on, Tony Blair was on Clyde One this morning.
he's got the new morning show. He actually laid all these very salient, coherent points down as to what you need to do in this gap, what has to be achieved. It went through everything. And I did actually think at the time he should be Prime Minister. And again, removing politics from it, removing all that, because it's we're so polarised now that, you know, people hate Tony Blair because of the Iraq war and forget about minimum wage and various other things. But forgetting all that stuff, just the fact that he showed leadership.
Yeah, he really did, David. I have to say, regardless of who you vote for, it doesn't matter. Today I thought, my God, yes, all those things need to be put in place. Why are they not being put in place? Why is he saying it? Why is Boris Johnson not saying it?
Well, it's the same with Obama.
Yes.
Right? If you look at Obama and you think the current situation, if Obama was there, it'd be a completely different set of rules, completely different situation.
It wouldn't just be America. That's one of the reasons, is because the 2008 collapse, and the listeners might know this, might not, but much though he's often ridiculed, Gordon Brown saved the world. Now, Obama has said that. Gordon Brown started immediately getting a global response to the crash. Now, can you imagine if we'd had a unified global response to this? But you can't, because of Trump, Johnson, Xi Jinping, all these people, all they want is their own area. And it's amazing that Gordon Brown is credited by many world leaders with having saved the economy of the world.
So, Dave, I just wanted to mention to you on the subject of Guy Fawkes. In Harrogate, there's the Guy Fawkes Arms, and they can be contacted on 01423866400. But that has to be before Thursday because we're going to shut it down.
That was good. We got our numbers out, Paul.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, exactly. Paul, we need to talk about the tour.
Yes.
So, we're not visiting anywhere this week because, unfortunately, we really are gutted about this, actually. We've had to cancel the tour in the spring because it's just, we've been told by the theatres, it's not going to be able to go ahead at that point.
Yeah.
So we've looked into what we can do and we don't know what we can do. So we feel it's only fair. We can't hold on to everybody's money when things are so difficult, when we don't know if it's going to be 2022 or what the hell is happening because everything is changing so fast. It's rotten.
We took the decision to cancel the show and we're really sorry about it. But who knows what could happen further down the line?
Yeah, I mean, once the Civil War in America finishes in 2021, I mean, we're interested in what's left of that, and the separate country of Gilead that Donald Trump will form. Burning down the house, we're talking about, you know, the consequences of actions, because your free bus trips then led to you rewarding yourself with a couple of Empire biscuits.
Genuinely, to talk about weight, which sometimes we do delve into serious topics, my weight has gone up and down. I have put weight on again over lockdown, and it's been up and down all my life. And I do use food as a reward when I'm bored or I'm stressed, whatever, but predominantly as a reward. And I still, when I finish a job or I do something that I'm pleased that's it finished, the first thing I want to do is have a wee treat.
Yeah.
Some people would have a fag, some people might have a glass of wine. I want to reward myself with food, and it's a battle. It's a battle. Well, it's bizarre because I haven't actually done anything that I would need to reward myself for many, many months, but still have managed to gain weight. But I think it'll be a battle my entire life.
I think you're right. I think that's a lot. A lot of people go the same way, where the reward system is. I find that if I'm working away, when I'm driving home, I think, oh, I could get a pizza the way back or something. Why? It's part of your brain saying, go on, buy the shit. What is that about us?
I don't know. And I think it comes back to actually, it's the thrill, it's a wee bit of adrenaline. So if you do something that you've been conditioned as that's naughty, you shouldn't have that biscuit or you shouldn't have that. Again, there's more pleasure doing it if you're sneaking it. If you're sneaking a biscuit out the tin, then there would be to sit down in front of people and enjoy lovely food. It's a different feeling.
The biggest adrenaline rush I can get is peeling potatoes.
Well, yeah, well, listen, but that's as you live on the edge.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the Irish in me.
But I think you hit the nail on the head there, Jane. You tapped into something very interesting because if you look at various weight loss programmes, let's not name anyone, where they refer to certain things as sins. And maybe it's my Italian upbringing. The idea that any kind of food can be a sin is ludicrous. And that's why, you know, if it's naughty, if it's secretive, then you'll stuff your face. I found myself for years eating stuff in the kitchen while I was cooking.
Because you were sneaking it, David.
Because I was sneaking it. Once I realised that, it became a lot easier. Because if I was going to sneak something, they go, no, stop it. You're not being sneaky or anything. Nobody's bothered if you're eating that.
Well, see when I was young, like my mum was always very, very slim. So I kind of felt a bit like a failure because I should be slim, I felt, but I wasn't. But my dad, who was a wee bit overweight, he used to get me to make him a piece and jam, and he used to get me to put two tea biscuits inside the piece and jam and a Kit Kat. So the Kit Kat and the tea biscuits were in the piece and jam.
Jane, that's jail food. That's jail food you're talking about.
But he would always say to me, Hen, as much as he could get in the piece, and he'd go, Hen, I mean, make me that. But don't let your mother see.
I've had a couple of disturbing incidents recently on Zoom where I've been Zooming with people and they have said, well, it's obvious you're eating well.
What?
No, but what it was, they were talking about foodopolis.org is what they were talking about.
Ah! I knew you'd get that in there, good old.
Yes.
But genuinely, because they said that and I was like, what do you mean? I said, I've actually lost tons of weight. Oh, no, I just meant your website. You're obviously eating well. All right, thanks. Just sound like you're saying fat bastard.
Do you know, David, looking well. People think that's a nice thing to say. Whenever anyone said to me, oh, you're looking well, that in my head was, you've put weight on. And like my mum used to say, when a taxi would peep outside, see, I was 18, I was growing up with dads or whatever, the taxi would peep and my mum would say to me, I think we should maybe join a Weight Watchers together. She was 8 stone. And I remember my Uncle Bill said he would give me money if I could lose a stone within a certain period of time. And again, he thought that he was being kind. But what it made me do is eat so healthily and or hardly eat in front of anybody because I had to, because I felt I had to do that. But behind the scenes...
Kit Kat sandwich. That phrase you said, when people say you're looking well, that's code. I can't count the number of times you've said to me, oh, David, you're looking well.
On the subject of carrying weight, we did the hydro a few years back, and our good friend, and I'm sure she won't mind me telling this story, Lorraine McIntosh, we were on the stage at the hydro doing the technical rehearsal, and for some reason, I was scratching my belly, and she said to me, God, you, they make your belly look so real, don't they? They put hair on it and everything. And I went, I know, try and pull one of the hairs out. And she tried to pull one of the hairs out of my belly. And I was, that's my belly. Honestly. And then Jane gave her the fright of her life after that. Do you remember, Janie?
Oh, that was you that put me up to that.
That's a surprise.
But Jane went and guilt tripped her at lunchtime and said, Paul's really, really conscious about his weight. You shouldn't have said that to her.
I think the biggest thing people can look at is see when you're, if you, it doesn't matter what you do, if you exercise or if you try to, you know, eat less or something, it's the day that someone doesn't exercise or the day that they have a chocolate biscuit and they go, ah, well, that's a day ruined, and they stuff their face. When in actual fact, you could have your day of not going to the gym, you could have your day of a chocolate biscuit. That's not the issue. The issue is saying, oh, that's the day ruined, and then going mad.
Oh, David, I could be bad on a Tuesday and that's the week ruined, and I'll say I'll start again on the Monday. And I don't do that now, but I did do that in the past.
I remember somebody, I can remember it vividly actually, somebody saying to Guy Fawkes, you're fair putting on the beef.
That's it, that's everyone ruined, I'm going to burn down the house.
That's why he did it.
So can I ask you a question as well? Do you think by the time this ep goes out, because today's Monday, so on Thursday, do you think we'll know the next president? Do you think that'll be...
No.
Or do you think it's going to take a while?
No, I think, Dave, I think we will. I think we will. And I'll tell you why, because the TV ratings, they ram it so hard in your throat, they need to be the first to declare.
But the trouble is they can't, because there's so many postal votes coming in. And what's interesting, postal votes, for any American listeners...
G'day, America!
Yes! The Republicans are talking about how, I think Trump even said, although we don't go to him for anything other than laughing at her, he said it's unconstitutional for the election not to be decided on election night. Election night is a fabrication of the 20th century. Do they think that in the Constitution in 1776, or after even 1780, they were going, aye, right, we'll get all the votes in on one day from across America? There's nothing in the Constitution about election day. It's about the election.
Mm-hmm.
And the election is done when all the votes have been counted. And the fact that they've now got the Supreme Court packed with people from A Handmaid's Tale who are all insisting that votes have to be counted by a certain time, it's fabricated. And they've got the public watching Fox News saying, aye, that's right, it has to be done by the third. 200 years ago, are you really saying they counted 100 million votes in a day?
It does confuse me, the whole thing, though, because surely the electoral college votes should reflect the size of the state more. Surely that doesn't make any sense. Why is it that three states can really dominate the outcome of an election? And I'm saying that through ignorance, because explain it to me.
Did that not happen the first time with the first time George Bush got in?
That's
it,
right.
It was all about Florida.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, well, recount Florida then. And then they just started discounting votes.
Yes.
Like, or you're in the jail or you're black or whatever
but,
it was.
This goes right back to, and for everyone who's doing hashtag All Lives Matter, listen up. This goes back to the Civil War. Just before it, there was the three-fifths clause. I'll make it as quick as I can. So a slave counted as three-fifths of a person. And although slaves didn't have the vote, the population in those states increased to include three-fifths of slaves. So those slave-owning states had more college votes. After Lincoln's death, when Johnson takes over, the black codes come into effect, whereby if you are a freed slave, if you're not still on the place of the person who owned you in the southern states. You'll be charged with vagrancy, mm-hmm. you'll be chased out of town, you'll be brutalised. So slaves, freed slaves, fled north. But Johnson was fighting against the 14th Amendment, which would give freed slaves the vote. Eventually it passed, but states had their own take on it, so not all states allowed free slaves to vote. So you end up in a situation where free slaves are up in the north in states that give them the vote. However, in the south, where there are fewer people because the slaves have left, they have the three-fifths clause, so they actually have more electoral college votes than the states to which freed slaves have fled. Mm. So you could argue, and it is argued, that the electoral college vote spread is a direct result of slavery. And to this day, states which have a higher black population have fewer electoral college votes. And that's the electoral college system. But of course, we can't talk because we have first past the post. Mm-hmm. You know, someone can get 4 million votes and not get a seat in Parliament.
Proportional representation, David.
Proportional representation, yep, that's a thing.
Proportional representation, but with guns.
Proportional representation, but with guns?
Aye.
What other kind would you have?
Vote for Palsa!
I should also point out, folks, that this is the first episode of Season 2. And as I said at the start, those of you with that basic Latin or the papes among you, the alpha and omega of Season 2, this is also the last episode of Season 2.
Oh, oh dear.
The podcast is great fun and it really started to kind of promote Still Gone, the tour. But work does come in with Scotland not going into full lockdown. Things are filming again. My time is getting taken up. I'm directing a couple of things and Paul's time and James' time. And Marcus is actually not even here today. It was becoming very, very difficult to actually organise and schedule the podcast, and it takes a good day or two to edit it as well. So it's with heavy heart, because it has been enormous fun, that we say that this is the last three down, one across.
No, everybody.
And we can't, and we can't even say where we're going, because we aren't going anywhere. The irony of Still Gone, but we're no gone.
Just one other thing. Do we want to talk about revisit the brightest sparkler?
Oh, there we are. Yes. Oh,
yes. Who's your brightest sparkler, Paul?
I think I'd have to say the lovely Barbara Rafferty. We did a tour a couple of years back with the National Theatre of Scotland called Your Granny. And Barbara and I worked on that for, I don't know, 3-4 months or whatever. And I had the best time with her. She was the best laugh.
Yes.
Totally fearless. She does not give a monkey's. And so she gets the brightest sparkler from me.
Oh,
that's lovely.
I worked with Barbara and Bingo and I thought she was smashing as well. Now, Barbara probably would be half my weight. Would you say that, Paul? And I was walking up a hill in Edinburgh in the most terrible weather, and I was supposed to be looking out for Barbara, but I slipped. And rather than go down myself, I grabbed Barbara's arm to steady me so that she would go down and I would save myself. She was an absolute tonic, and we had many, many laughs on that job.
We did a tour many, many years ago, and I was playing keyboards and doing the music, and Barbara was in it, and we were in Aberdeen for a week, and she and I spent the entire night drinking, and it got to the point that we were still in the bar first thing in the morning, and the police came in asking for me and saying, is this your car, give me the registration number. I said yeah, and they said, well, it's been parked in Aberdeen station for 2 or 3 nights. It's been considered a bomb risk because Princess Anne is coming to the station today. So could you move it?
Oh.
Not really.
Barbara leaned across and said, he's going to give you his keys. He can't move it, officer. He's pished.
Well, do you know, Paul and I were talking about this the other day, randomly, this has nothing to do with that, but there is a link. We were talking about my mum being in hospital and things have been quite difficult over the past kind of few months with her, but she's back out now. But then I was saying that she's deep as a post because she took her hearing aid out and she put it into a tub of face cream, right? So that's it. So a wee man came round to fix it the other day. He said, well, I'm not going to lie to you, the hearing aid's humped, but the good news is it looks 20 years younger. So that was quite funny. So we were talking about that, and then I said, when my Aunt Jean Smith went down to my cousin's wee girl's Holy Communion down in Luton, and she got off the plane. Now, she'd been 87 or 88 at the time, and she had her wee suitcase, and my cousin Gina got my Aunt Jean in the car and then drove home. When they got home, realised she'd left the suitcase at Luton Airport. She'd forgotten in the car park to put it in the car. So my Aunt Jean's glasses, all her clothes, her hearing aid stuff, her medication, everything that was needed was in this suitcase. Disaster. So Gina went back to the airport to get the stuff, and it had been taken in the suitcase, destroyed. It's absolutely damnable. My Jean was raging.
Jeannie, do you have a brightest sparkler?
Do you know, there's been so many people over the years that we've worked with that are just, and I love, actually, when we're doing Still Game and sometimes a young lad would come on, and I love that when young people come on and you can, oh, there's just something about them. You go, you're a lovely young guy or whatever. Oh, I don't mean that. Let me take that out, David. Oh, young man, you're a lovely young man, you. No, I don't mean that.
You know that's staying in.
Even, not just even in theatre and telly, but even in schools when I'm working. But I do love it when you're working with folk and you see somebody, you think, well, you're a right good egg, and they've just got something about them. They're fun, they're kind, and you think, you'll do well in the world, whatever you do. Yeah. And I love that. And it does. And when even if you're doing a show with young people, and it doesn't need to be the person who's the best in the show, but somebody that maybe comes on the most over that time or comes out their shell, I love that. And that gives me great pleasure, an old 50-year-old that I am now.
David?
Yes?
Do you have a brightest sparkler?
I think most people are really lovely. Most people, we are polarised just now in America, in Britain, be it Brexit, be it anti-vaxxing, all these different things. People can't see a middle ground and can't come together. But that's not true. That's a tiny minority who are polarised, you know, the anti-Semitic Corbyn shouting things onto the get immigrants out, right-wing stuff. These are massively polarised, tiny minorities. It's only social media and the news that makes us think we're in this place. In actual fact, the world is populated by sparklers.
That is a lovely thing. And David, even just to, if we're coming to the end, if Anne Frank can say, fundamentally, she said,
we've got her. Jane, she's not on today.
Yeah, she's not on, but she said,
hang on, Bono's at the door.
She can say that people are fundamentally good at heart. Yeah.
Be good, do good things.
Oh, that's nice, Paul. That's nice. I think I would also go with the Spinal Tap philosophy of have a good time
all the time.
And on that note, folks, I think that's us wrapping up. Once and forever, DM1across.
Oh dear.
Folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. And so it's a goodbye from me, Paul Riley.
Oh, and I'll miss you all. It's goodbye from me, Jane McCarry.
And it's goodbye from me, David Goodall.
And a wee goodbye from Mark Cox, too.
3 Down 1 Across is an Osprey production. This episode was recorded remotely and is the last one. It was produced at Sounds Move Facilities.